Professor Karen Phelps. Hello, welcome to On The Mic.
Hi, Mike.
I'm a big fan. You know, I just want to say that off the bat here. Everything that you've done, like you've obviously written amazing books. I've seen you on TV shows over the years. You're head of the Australian Medical Association, and you've got your own practice around here in the eastern suburbs, which you've been running for a long time. And I love your work with the Yes Vote. You marched in the Mardi Gras recently as well to celebrate Australia Said Yes. So, and now you're running as the independent for Wentworth because Malcolm Turnbull is not there anymore because the Liberal Party has voted him out. How is it all going?
It's going really well. Spending a lot of time out in the streets, out and about. This morning we've been at Randwick, Clovelly, Bronte, Bondi, talking to people, just going about their daily lives, about what's important to them. And what's coming up very strongly is that they don't like what's happened in politics just recently, and certainly this revolving door of leadership is a really big hot button issue for a lot of people.
It's just a constant catfight, and I feel like stuff's not getting done, especially at the moment when, you know, everything's in limbo. And I feel like as well, like there's a lot of legislation that Scott Morrison probably wants to get across the line, but he's not going to do it until this election happens because he doesn't want to sway the vote towards you or the Labor Party. So it really, Australia's on hold, and then really the Liberal Party, they're to blame for it.
They are to blame for this current, well, I think it's fair enough to call it a crisis because we are facing a by-election. We are going to face a general election in the middle of next year, which will determine the government going forward. So this very critical period, this next 9 months, I think it's very important that the Australian people, through Wentworth, send a message to Canberra that we need to see politics done differently.
So how's it going out there on the streets, like shaking hands and kissing babies, knocking on doors? My stepdad
just
was
my usual day-to-day life, yes.
My stepdad, David Jull, a federal politician for about 30 years with the Liberal Party, and it's a hard slog. It's a tough job. And you're going out there and, you know, I mean, and you obviously love it, meeting people and, what you know, working with people. I mean, I guess as being a doctor, you're meeting people every day as well. But what's it like out there when you have to go to someone's door and just knock on it and say, hi, can I please have your vote? Have you got like an opening line? Do you like rehearse it in front of the mirror or anything like that?
Well, it really is about timing as well. Yeah. And initially it was, I'm coming to talk to you about the by-election that's coming up in Wentworth. Some people didn't know when it was going to be, so we could talk to them about timing. And then it's a discussion about policy, if people want to talk about that. And the really big issue in Wentworth at the moment is climate change action. And that's why last week I released my climate change action policy, so that it's a blueprint for Australia to go forward, to rely much more and eventually entirely on renewables, and to get rid of the fossil fuel energy that is causing so much damage to our environment.
So we really are hopeless in Australia when it comes to fossil fuels. I mean, I was on this real-time website the other day called NemWatch, and it shows each state and how much power they're using from different sources. And like New South Wales and Victoria, New South Wales is black coal, but Victoria uses the dirty brown coal, which is nowhere near as efficient or as good. But it's like 90-95% and that we're using from fossil fuels and coal. It was a surprise to me because I thought by now, and all of the campaigning that we've seen for so long, and judging by how high our electricity bills are, and the fact that we're not building any more coal-fired power stations, that we would have been a little bit more ahead by now. Why is that?
Well, we can't go ahead because our government's been paralysed for more than a decade. They've got no policy on renewables. They've got no policy on climate change action. And unless we have policy, then people who are wanting to invest in renewables don't have that security that for the next 20 or 30 years that their money is going to be well spent with government policy that is stable and secure. And that's one of the things that is part of my climate action policy, is to make sure that we do have secure government policy that supports development and research into renewable energies. Now, we saw in South Australia just recently the big battery that went in there.
Yeah. And how did that go?
Incredibly well. Well, I mean, that's turning a profit after 6 months.
It had a lot of knockers. A lot of people said it wasn't going to happen. And Elon Musk's come in and he's gone, you know what, I'll do it for free. It's like he's delivering a pizza. If it doesn't work in a couple of months, you get it free.
Well, it's working. And it's showing us that Australia can do better, and it can do a whole lot better than we're doing
now. Don't South Australia have the highest electricity prices in the world? Or
electricity prices coming down.
Yeah.
And that's what we will see. As renewables come online and they become more efficient, then the prices prices will come down, but we need to see that initial research and development phase. We also need to make sure that there are no new coal-fired power plants and that the existing subsidies are scrapped, because it's not a level playing field for renewables versus coal-fired.
Yeah. Because well, why is it around the other parts of the world there's like hundreds of coal-fired power plants being built as we speak? And they're talking about, you know, better coal. I mean, Scott Morrison walked in a parliament.
Well, I would challenge that assertion about coal-fired power stations being built, because it's going to become impossible to insure coal-fired power plants in future, because the international insurance companies are balking at that now. So every country is looking at renewables and looking towards phasing out coal-fired power plants.
Oh, it's absolutely the answer, long-term, but we don't have the technology now. And, I mean, sure, fair enough, I don't mind paying a little bit more in my electricity bill, but there's a lot of people out there who are struggling, and like $10, $20 extra every few months when they pay their electricity bill can break the bank. I mean, how are those people supposed to accept paying so much more for electricity prices in the meantime? Because we clearly do not have the technology now.
If we don't invest in research and technology and development of renewables, the power price situation can only get worse. It's been getting worse.
Yeah.
And so what we need to do is to put that investment up front into the science, into the development, and make sure that we develop renewable technologies, which, as time goes by, will improve and improve and improve and bring the power prices down.
That's fair enough. I mean, it's so 110% the answer. I don't think there is any argument. Like,
no.
We definitely need to sort out, you know, whether it's solar or more hydro. I mean, someone said the other day that if we had more dams in Australia and more hydropower, then maybe we wouldn't have such a drought problem.
I think we need to look at a whole range of renewables options, and certainly, you know, solar and wind. Australia could do, could be a market leader, could be a world leader in renewable energy if we really harness those renewable energy sources.
Yeah.
We can do it, and we should do it.
Absolutely. So, what's the main thing other than that everyone is talking to you about out there in the streets? Are they upset about the whole Liberal Party fiasco? You know, voting out their local member who was the Prime Minister that a lot of people were quite proud of, even if they didn't really necessarily like the Liberal Party. They had the Prime Minister who was from their electorate. Do you think there'll be a bit of a protest vote about that?
There's no question that people are saying, I'm really happy to have an independent to vote for who is not one of the major parties, because people are looking for politics to be done differently. But they are certainly very unhappy with what happened to Malcolm Turnbull. We still don't have an explanation as to why that happened.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are just scratching their heads going, why are we in a by-election now? There's a general election in the middle of next year, which will decide the government. And the right wing of the Liberal Party moved against their own leader.
Yeah.
Of the Liberal Party, their own Prime Minister, and then went, oh, why is he leaving?
But this happens all the time. It's like we've had 10, not just Liberal, but Labor Party as well. We had 10, is it 7 Prime Ministers in 10 years or something?
It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's
like, a revolving people overseas religious. Think it's a joke.
Yes.
And like Malcolm Turnbull, he doesn't even know how to explain it to people over there. I think he did a talk at the UN the other day, and they're like, so you were voted Prime Minister, but your own party kicked you out. Why? And he's like, I don't even know. It's just, is it because of the someone's done some local polls and said, oh, he's not as popular anymore, we might lose the next election, you know, we'd better get rid of him.
Who knows? We have had no explanation, and that really is for, you know, Scott Morrison, the current Australian Prime Minister, to explain to the people.
And it costs us a lot of money as well. I mean, to do a by-election is something like $1.5 million from, you know, Electoral Council money.
And the Liberal Party are throwing enormous amounts of money at this.
Yeah, I read something like $1 million they're spending on the local campaign.
Yeah.
Which nowhere near as much as you've got, of course, being a Eastern Suburbs doctor. I mean, you must be ploughing the cash into it.
Well, Jackie and I are underwriting our campaign, but we have had a crowdfunding campaign for grassroots donors.
But you don't have anywhere near as much money as the Liberal Party.
Of course
not. But they
have
to win, otherwise you've got the balance of power.
Well, I think that it's important that I give the people of Wentworth a viable alternative to the Liberals, so that it's not just business as usual. Mm. You know, that they just plug somebody else back in who's going to spout the government line and that we don't hear anything different from them.
But I just don't understand their thinking with the slogans and the campaign that they're running against you. I mean, you've given them a preference, first preference. Say, come on, guys.
No. 10th preference.
A 10th way, yeah.
I'm putting all the independents and the minor parties first, and then the Liberal Party are in at 10. So,
oh, okay. Well, they're saying that on one of their Twitter campaigns that you've preferenced them, and then you changed your mind. Why do you even have to tell them? And why the hell do we have preferences anyway? Like, why can't we just say, I want to vote for that person or I want to vote for that person? Because, I mean, look at this how to vote form. I mean, this, what is this, 16 candidates.
16.
How many do we need? And I honestly believe that the majority of these people know that they're not going to get in. All they're doing is trying to suck up to whoever does get in, say, oh, I'll give you preferences, so you've got to do this for me. Like, there's one guy who just wants people to do things for the arts. It's like the arts party. Okay, that's great. I mean, I'm in the arts. I love to see more money spent in the arts, but that doesn't mean that people are going to vote for you to actually run their electorate because you want more in the arts. Well, why do we have to have preferences anyway? Isn't it a bit of a joke?
Well, it's a participatory democracy, and so people have every right to put themselves forward for election. And, you know, that's what I'm doing as an independent. Mm. And I have a broad suite of policies that I think are important to the electorate, and they're certainly the things that I believe in. And I think we need to see government with more heart. And we've seen a lot of heartlessness from this government.
Well, I can't believe this morning I was just flicking through Twitter, and Twitter could be such an angry thing to start reading, especially when it comes to politics. And they seem like the Liberal Party really having a crack at you, but they've got nothing. Like, the best thing that they've got at the top of their feed today was, oh, a vote for Karen Phelps is a vote for Labor. She has a web developer who once worked for Labor. I mean, what? Is that the best you can do for $1 million and all the money that you're spending? Absolutely hopeless.
Look, I clarified that this week. My web developer, and we had to find someone really quickly
because
we had this thrown at us. Of course.
Well, is that an issue?
Of course. But she worked for the Yes campaign, for marriage equality, you know? So,
But even if she did, even if she's currently making websites for Labor, Liberal, you know, any other independents as well, good on her. She's a local businesswoman that's doing
right.
a great job.
I'm using a local Australian business to develop the web. And, you know, I've run small businesses for, you know, many, many, many years. Mm. And so I understand the pressures on small business as well. And you talked earlier about, you know, budgets and spending on a campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know about the value of money, and I know about, you know, how hard it is to earn and to save and to run a business. And so we're running this campaign as a tight ship with a tight budget.
Mm.
We're using the donation funds very wisely. We're not wasting a cent. And I think that that's really important for people to understand that with an independent, with a grassroots campaign, that this is really about what the people of Wentworth want.
But how do they benefit for voting for an independent? Because a lot of people say, oh, it's an independent. They won't be able to do as much as like a party of members together is so much stronger. Like, what makes you different?
Well, a party member can only articulate the party line. So if you were to ask the Liberal candidate, for example, what their view is on something like climate change, they can only tell you what the party lets them say. They can't say, well, I think. All they can say is, this is what the party tells me I'm thinking and can say. And that's why, for me, being an independent is where I'm most comfortable, because certainly in an election like this, it's so important that we have some different thinking that is going into policy.
It's not harder to get things done?
Well, I think it could be. It's a unique moment in politics, because if there is a change in the balance of power over the next 9 months or so until the next general election, I can have a real influence with the other independents. I can have a real influence on policy. So, you know, we can look at good legislation and I can support that. I can look at dodgy legislation and help to amend that and look at bad legislation and block that. And so, you know, there are influences that a group of independents on the crossbench can actually have on the direction of Australia going forward. And one of the things that I am concerned about is this religious freedoms legislation.
Yeah, what is that? That's one of the legislations that they're going to put through after this by-election. So, I mean, why aren't they're obviously not going to say anything about it now. But they'll wait till if they get in, and then they'll try and get it across the line. And why haven't they said what it's going to be about?
Well, what we know is that it's... I actually submitted to the Ruddock Inquiry, and I went to speak to the panel and was interviewed by them. And I've been waiting to see this report come out. And what we know is that the government has been sitting on this for months and they are refusing to release it. And so I've called for the Ruddock report and the accompanying legislation to be released before the Wentworth by-election, because I think that the people of Wentworth are owed an explanation as to where this is going to lead. And and what it is intending to do is to water down anti-discrimination laws so that religion can be used as an excuse to discriminate against certain groups. Now, fundamentally and initially, that is going to be the gay and lesbian community, the LGBTQI community,
really?
Because it came out of the marriage equality legislation. But what we don't know is whether it could also allow discrimination against people who are of a particular minority religious group, for example. If somebody in one religion didn't want to provide service to someone in another religion for religious reasons, could that be something that the government is seeking to do?
Yeah, you've got to know. We could sit here for hours and speculate. Who knows what it's all about?
That's right.
But I mean, it is an issue, because if it's something that they're going to legislate on, they should just do it, because that's what the government's supposed to do, not wait until
they've got more numbers. They should tell us. And I mean, if it's, you know, we need to know. And I think it's the least the government can do with this religious freedoms legislation is to let the people of Wentworth know what they're planning.
So if you do get in as an independent, and you have to work with other independents to, you know, vote down legislation or see whatever it is that you agree with, is that like an own party unto itself, all of those independents banding together?
No. Independents operate as independents and make their own decisions.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, that'll be a great way to look at things like immigration. And I noticed the other day you were watching a video on live exports and talking about banning that. Is that something that's going to happen?
Live sheep exports need to be phased out. There's a plan over the next 5 years. I'd like to see that accelerated. I mean, if you look at the videos of what those poor animals go through in a long sea journey from Australia to the Middle East, and then their fate when they arrive there. But, you know, they're cramped, they're in crowded conditions, they're overheated, they're seasick, they can't get to food and water. It's an absolute disgrace.
But it's only because, you know, certain religions want to actually kill the animal in a certain way, halal, and you know, they have to eat it within a certain amount of time after it's been killed. And is that the reasons why we're live exporting them? It's not necessarily that they're putting them out in a paddock somewhere.
No, it's going over for slaughter. But the 95% of the meat exports to the Middle East from Australia are chilled meats, prepared chilled meats that go over there for human consumption. So it's not an industry that I think that we can continue if we are to be a humane country.
Is it only the Middle East where we live export to? I don't think we live export to Japan or any other.
No, these ships are going to the Middle East.
Yeah, right. Okay, cool. So what is the other political party's stance on this? Have they said? I mean, the Liberal Party are keeping it going as far as I know, but they want to make changes to it. But you want to absolutely rule it out and stop it.
I want to stop the live sheep export industry.
And what about the other independents? Do you know where they stand? I mean,
I don't. They'd have to speak for themselves. But I've looked at this and I've come to my conclusions.
How do you feel about things like medicinal marijuana?
I think it's an important option for people who are suffering and where there's no better way and no less harmful way of being able to manage pain or nausea or some of the other conditions that medicinal marijuana can actually help.
What about going all out and saying, right, let's just legalise marijuana like they have in so many other countries around the world?
I think there are some health risks with recreational use of cannabis, but I think it's really so widespread. I wouldn't want to see people going to jail.
But there's health risks
with
smoking and alcohol.
Yeah. Look, I think to an extent people need to be able to make up their own minds about things, and I think that certainly looking at the issue with medicinal cannabis use, it's an important medical issue.
Yeah.
What we do need to see are the right doses of the right types of cannabis preparations, so that people are getting the right medication for their particular use. I think that education is going to be very important around that for patients and for doctors.
Because you wrote a book on cancer recovery.
I did.
And did that entail any medicinal marijuana in there? Was it more about, you know, chemo and radiation?
I do have a chapter on that.
Yeah, you do.
I do. I have a chapter on herbs and supplements and lifestyle factors, exercise, meditation. It's a holistic view of how you can manage your way through cancer care. And there is a chapter there on the global picture around medicinal cannabis use.
Yeah, well, my dad's had cancer for quite a few years now, and he's just finished some more radiation at the SAN here in Sydney, and he's got his hands on some CBD oil, which I'm probably dobbing him in, but I think it's illegal. But he actually had to get a certificate so he could use it. But it took the pain away immediately, like within a few minutes. But for some people it works and some people it doesn't. But I think is that part of the problem with legalizing certain medicinal marijuana uses in Australia, because it needs to be tested by so many people and independent organizations and different universities. I mean, why is there so much red tape when something can be so good for people?
Well, it's a pharmaceutical product, so it has to be the right preparation.
It's a plant.
It is, but it's an extract of a plant. Mm. So, I mean, plants can be treated in particular ways. It's not whole plant. Mm. You know, it's not like, you know, you take tea leaves and, you know, make a tea out of it. It's the actual medicinal preparations are particular extracts of particular species that have a particular chemical combination. And then the doctor who prescribes it needs to be able to understand what is the best preparation for a particular purpose. So it's not just as simple as, you know, just going and having a smoke. It's actually, you know, there's a bit of science behind it.
Yeah, so it's been a few years since you wrote that book. Any of your thoughts on cancer and, you know, the treatment of patients changed since you brought that out? Because, I mean, the technology is just moving forward in leaps and bounds. I mean, they used to just radiate your whole body with radiation and give you chemo everywhere, but now it's so much more targeted.
Well, I've been working in medicine. I graduated in 1981, so I've been in the medical field for a really long time, and the advances that I've seen in medical science and medical practice over that time have been just amazing. Mm. And that's why, if I'm elected to Parliament, I would do whatever I could to support our health system and to make sure that we had a vibrant and very active research community.
So what about you personally on a health benefits side? I mean, because you've written a few books, and obviously there's the cancer book, but I think you had another, it was like a gut health.
That's the most recent one,
book is the most recent one.
The mystery gut.
Well, gut health is so massive at the moment, and it's something that we don't really know a lot about. I mean, I've got a friend of mine, he owns a company called ProGood, and his dad, Professor Ellerman, he used to work for the CSIRO, and one of his jobs is to find the best prebiotic and probiotic strain for the gut. And this stuff is amazing. And there's a movie on it that he took me to see a few weeks ago called that gut film. And some of the things that they're learning about the gut and how it's like your second brain, and, you know, it helps run the immune system. Like, my dad's constantly taking probiotic because of all the medication he's on for cancer. Is there anything that you do in your daily ritual? Maybe stick some probiotic in a water, or do you drink a lot of kombucha? Or what's your story?
The foundation for me is nutrition and exercise, and if you can take care of those two things, and getting enough sleep. Mm. So if you can take care of those things, then a lot of the rest of your good health follows. So
what are you, an F45 girl, gym girl? What are you, golf? How do you get fit?
I mix it up a bit. I go for a walk every day, and I swim a kilometre or so most days, and I go paddleboarding when I can, when the weather and time allow.
Ah, a bit of sup paddleboarding, cool.
Yes, loving it.
Nice, that's good fun.
It is, it's fantastic.
What about all the, I mean, there's so many crazy diets obviously around all the time. I mean, there's the keto diet and vegan diet. What do you think of being a vegan? You think that's healthy?
It can be, but people can get tripped up on it too. You have to really know what you're doing as a vegan, and particularly with children. But a lot of the problems I see vegans running into are quite often vegans who are living in a family of people who eat everything. And what they do is they just cut out all the protein, and they don't really think their way through what they need. And so the problems that I see for people who are vegans who don't really understand the nutrition of it, they get iron deficiency, vitamin B12 deficiency, they get zinc deficiency, they can get protein deficiency. And so what I like to do with people who are vegan to maintain their health is to get a nutritionist or a dietitian to see them, and just to run through what they're eating, and to make sure that we plug any gaps in what they're getting in their diet. So you can be a healthy vegan and get everything, but it's easy to get deficiencies as well. Mm. The other thing that a lot of vegans will need to do is to supplement with certain vitamins and minerals.
I guess it's the same with like a keto diet, or like there's a carnivore diet that people are on. Like I think, you know, Jordan Peterson, he's like a professor in the US. There's a lot of speaking tours. And I was watching him in an interview the other day with Joe Rogan. He's like one of the biggest, you know, podcasters in the world. And he was saying that he had all sorts of issues, like he couldn't sleep, he had all sorts of health problems and depression problems. And then he changed his diet to just 100% meat, and all of his problems went away. And he can't explain it, he doesn't understand it, and he no way, shape or form recommended it or anything like that. But if people out there are watching this and thinking maybe they have health problems or something like that, would you say it's a good idea to just try different diets and listen to your body and just see how you feel? See what's right for you?
I would never recommend an extreme fad diet because sooner or later you're going to run into trouble. Mm. And in most cases, sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
So what I recommend to people is if they think that diet is an issue for them, that they see their GP and they get an assessment. I mean, for example, if somebody is celiac and you cut all grains out of your diet, then you're obviously going to cut gluten out of your diet and you'll feel better. But then you'll only feel better for a while because sooner or later you're going to get other nutritional deficiencies that come in. And so if you see a GP and get a proper assessment and then see a dietitian, and then a dietitian can run you through a plan so that you have a well-rounded diet. I mean, 95% of Australians don't eat enough fruit and vegetables.
Yeah,
which is
I'm one of them.
It's pretty incredible when you consider the fantastic access that we have in Australia to fruit and vegetables and great produce.
And the nutritional value as well compared to other countries. Mm. Like, I spent a bit of time in the US and you eat a banana over there and you hang on a minute, this doesn't taste as good as it does in Australia.
Mm.
I don't know, I guess maybe because they're sprayed or farmed in a different way. So yeah, eat more fruit and vegetables. You heard it here from the doctor, the professor, I should say. What about fasting? Do you see any value in that? I mean, I've got friends who regularly fast, and they say it's really good to clear your gut out, and your body does all sorts of amazing things. Do you ever do that, or do you know anyone who does? You think it's a good idea?
There are different models of fasting, and then there's a lot of evidence that it can actually help with things like blood sugar control, lowering cholesterol, weight loss, and reduction in inflammatory conditions. So again, this is something that is worth doing with the advice of an expert like a dietitian. But if people want to try it out, there are different models. They can either do the 5-2, which is where you have a very low calorie intake or low kilojoule intake on 2 days of the week and eat just sort of a regular sensible diet in the other 5 days. The other way is you can do it is to have 16 hours of the day where you don't eat and you only eat during an 8-hour window. So that's another way that that is becoming quite popular too.
Is it the same thing if I just forget to have breakfast? I go, oh yeah, it's lunchtime. I didn't have breakfast. Oh, I'm fasting. That's healthy.
It depends what you're doing the rest of the day.
But some people go for like days and fast. I just couldn't do that. I mean, I know it'll probably make you feel good in the long run, but of course you're going to feel good because you finally get to eat.
Yeah, if you can't, if you can think.
It's bizarre. Okay, so you're heading back out there on the streets. You've got till October 20.
October 20.
Which is, what is that? It's only just over a week away now, isn't it?
2 weeks today.
What's the date? Oh, yes, it is too. So you're feeling confident?
I don't think anyone can afford to feel confident at this stage of an election where the Liberal Party has held the seat since 1944.
True, because that's more of the same.
Yeah. Well, I'm going out strongly on policy. I released a really comprehensive policy on climate change action this week. I also yesterday gave in principle support to a National Integrity Commission because a lot of people would be surprised that there is no overarching body looking out for anti-corruption measures in the federal sphere.
Are you kidding? We don't have that. I thought we had lots of different organisations that are anti-corruption and overseeing the government. You're saying we don't have that?
There is no overarching body, and there's a group of retired and former judges who have gotten together and come up with a model for a National Integrity Commission.
That's ridiculous. And, I was sure that we had that.
I think it's crazy. It's a really important oversight. So that's an important policy area.
That's the most important.
Yes.
How do we know? Like, the NBN, I mean, why is that a load of crap that we spend billions of dollars on where there are so many better ways to do it? I mean, there's so many things in government that you don't understand. And like, even it's just locally, like, why has it taken so many years just to build a little railway line through the middle of the city? Like, who's getting paid up there? How come we have a casino that isn't built yet that all of a sudden had to close down the rest of the city that's happening in Sydney? You're telling me no one is overseeing this and seeing and checking all the politicians involved's bank accounts?
Well, the New South Wales government has had an ICAC.
So we don't have a federal ICAC.
25 years, there is no federal.
Right, okay.
There is nothing federal that's comparable. So that's another
piece. That's shocking. I can't believe that.
Well, I think we need to have an organisation like that to restore faith in the honesty and transparency
of processes. Well, here's a perfect example. The Barrier Reef money that just got handed over by Malcolm Turnbull to some of his supposed mates, was it $440 million? There was no other companies that were allowed to bid for it. It's just like, yep, you guys look like you'll do the job pretty well. Here's a check for $440 million. I think ScoMo handed over the check. Like, that's unbelievable that there's no other political process behind that or even an external agency that's overseeing that. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's
Well, that's
crazy?
Why I've given in principle support to a National Integrity Commission, because
there's a lot of reasons, you know, isn't there?
There are unanswered questions. They need to be properly investigated. And I think it's important that this is not weaponized and used as political theatre. I think it's really important that it's properly overseen with a judicial oversight, and that has a model that is agreed upon by all parties. And I think it's something that could really change the political landscape and restore trust and faith in the system. Mm. I'm also out there talking about supporting our health system. Mm. I think we need to see much better treatment of asylum seekers and a solution for the people who've been trapped on Manus Island for 5 years and on Nauru.
So how's it work out there? Because you hear different sides to it. Like, they're offered free flights back home wherever they want to go, but they decide, no, we're going to stay here for the hope that we can end up staying in Australia.
I've talked to experts about this, and the AMA wants to evacuate the children and their families to Australia pending resettlement options, and that is something I would support. Mm. And I think it's important that the people who are remaining on Manus Island and Nauru are treated in the best way possible. Mm. And we're certainly not doing anything like the best we can do for the people who are detained under our government.
So what are you saying? Better facilities, better food,
healthcare,
access to healthcare. They don't have that already?
Everything we hear is that it's a terrible situation there for those people. And we need to fast track an acceptable regional solution in an appropriate country, third country. There's bipartisan support for offshore processing, and it would be unrealistic to think that the people who are currently on Manus Island and Nauru are likely to be, by either of the major parties, resettled in Australia. So we need to look at a fast-track regional solution that is acceptable to the people who are on Manus Island and Nauru, and better treatment for those people while they remain there. I've spent my entire working career trying to foster community harmony and, getting rid of divisiveness and having people understand each other and fighting against discrimination. And so, whatever policies help to enhance community harmony, that's what I'm interested in.
Well, you've enhanced community harmony for everyone, for me, for a lot of people out there, especially when it came to the yes vote. Where were you when that was announced?
I was at Prince Alfred Park.
So you're up there on the stage with Magda Zabanski and everyone?
Yes,
cool.
Yeah.
What was it
closely.
Like? What was the feeling?
Oh, it was elation. Oh, it was very nerve-wracking initially. And
what if it was no, man? That would have been horrific.
It would have been horrific. And we had to actually emotionally prepare ourselves for the possibility that we had to gear up and do it all again. And so when the result came through, everyone was just relieved and elated and just thrilled to pieces that we didn't have to go through it anymore. But then, of course, we had to wait until the 7th of December, until it went through the Parliament. And by that stage, it was pretty clear that it wasn't going to be blocked by Parliament again.
Wow, what an incredible achievement. And, you even put your own ads on, because you saw the opposition to the Yes Vote running their own campaigns, just saying ridiculous things. And at one stage, I heard some guy on Talkback Radio saying, oh, next thing you know, you'll be able to marry your goat. Some of the stuff they were saying was ridiculous. So you've gone, right. You know what? These people are dickheads. I'm going to get out there and put together my own ad and say exactly what it is. And good on you for doing that.
Well, I worked with the Equality Campaign, and it became this massive movement around Australia of thousands of people who picked up the phone, called a relative, called a friend, made a statement, did a Facebook post, put their vote into the mail and made sure that it got there so that they counted, And this, again, is participatory democracy. It's about people getting involved, and that's what the grassroots campaign of an independent is like. I mean, we've got volunteers getting out on the streets in their purple T-shirts, handing out how to vote cards and flyers for me because they want to see politics done differently. Mm. And it's just...
That's a good slogan, politics done differently. I like that.
I'm glad, thank you.
You put it on a T-shirt. Not that you need it. I think things are going fine. So you must have heard so many incredible stories about people that's lives were changed after, you know, the yes vote got across the line, and you played such an important part in it as well.
Well, I had a couple of women stop me down at Bondi Beach just a minute ago, and they said, we just feel so different and so fantastic. So we got married in May. They'd been together for over 20 years. And they said, we're still getting used to using the word wife and not feeling awkward about it. So, you know, just to be able to have a language for your relationship is really important. And to be able to feel as if you are equal to other Australians is really just such a wonderful outcome from 20 years of advocacy.
That's cool. What was it like in the Mardi Gras, like on being on the float with the yes vote? I've actually marched in the Mardi Gras. I'm not even gay. But they actually had a straight person's float for marriage equality many years ago. And David Campbell and all these other, you know, TV hosts were on there. It was a white theme that year. And I went dressed as the Pope because the Pope had just stepped down. And I thought, well, you know, this could be like auditioning for the job as well. So I'm cruising along with his car, waving at everyone, and they're like, oh, my God, it's the Pope. But like the crowd just go nuts. It's such a happy, fun environment. And I can't imagine what it would have been like straight after the yes vote.
Well, for Jackie and for me, going into the Mardi Gras this year was really a celebration of all of the hard work, and it was an acknowledgement and a thanks to all of the people who made it happen, because these things don't happen by individuals. They don't happen by, you know, small groups of people. A huge national movement like that could only happen because so many people got behind it, and not just the people who were directly affected, but our families, our friends, our supporters, our allies. And that's where it was just an extraordinary moment for the whole of Australia. For, you know, people felt as if they had all really achieved something fantastic.
Yeah, you really did. And well done once again. I mean, that's such an incredible thing for Australia. What was the end vote tally? What was the difference? Was it pretty close or?
It was about 62% in favour. So, that's pretty good. You know, look, you know, we always dreamed that it might be close to 100%, yeah. But it was never going to be. So, but I think that the heat has gone out of that now largely, and it's really just we have to wait and see what this religious freedoms legislation is planning for the LGBTQI community, because that could be a difficulty.
Karen Phelps, good luck out there.
Thank you.
You independent you, you know, we'll see what the people of Wentworth think on October 20. And it looks like we just may have you in Parliament making some big changes.
If that's what the people of Wentworth want, that's what will happen.
Excellent. Cool. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, Mike.